Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Saturday, May 14th. The time is 10:01 a.m. Please silence all cell phones. Present today are Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Olson is presently not at the table. Senator Hoffman is on his way. He was in the room and then got called out. Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, myself, Senator Bishop. So we have a quorum to do business. Today's agenda is HB 363, broadband, HB 19, limited teacher certificates and languages, HB 114, education supplemental loan programs, HB 127, Muni Bond Bank, 172, mental health facilities and meds, and lastly, for the day's agenda is HB 265, Healthcare Services, Telehealth. Senator Hoffman, I told him you were here and were called out, and now you're back.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so let me see here. HB 363, broadband. This is the first hearing for the bill. Our intention is to hear a bill introduction, sexual analyses, and take invited and public testimony and set the bill aside. Representative Edgman and Amory Lalake, staff to Rep. Edgman, are here. Please come forward and make your introductions, and the floor is yours. And we'll look around the table. I'll manage the table for questions.
So. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, committee members. For the record, my name is Bryce Edgman. I represent House District 37, which is in the lower southwest portion of the state. With me is my Chief of Staff, Amory Lalake. We know that time is of the essence, so our intent is to be quite brief and high level with our description of the bill before the committee. To set the stage before we get to more detail on the bill, I'd just like to comment that the opportunity before Alaska is transformative in terms of not just putting into place broadband, but putting into place high-quality, affordable, reliable broadband in every corner of the state that's physically possible. And the bill, again, that's before the committee is enabling legislation that sets up the framework to put the broadband office into place, to put some kind of a mechanism to receive the federal funds that are going to come into Alaska, and then to set up the process that's going to involve a lot of stakeholder engagement, a lot of partnerships, a lot of working relationships necessary to sort of fuse the federal, state, industry, community, schools, health clinics, all the partnerships that have to occur for it to, you know, to come into to being. So the bill that I introduced that was amended in Senate Labor and Commerce, the bill, the original bill was essentially taken from the governor's broadband task force that he commissioned in May of last year, finished its work in November, came forward with a number of recommendations. We drafted the bill in February, earlier this session, seems many, many moons ago, and we drew exclusively off the broadband task force report as a bill sponsor. You know, I didn't take any creative license at all. The bill was amended slightly in the two committees in the other body. And the task force itself, again, commissioned by Governor Dunleavy, really, I think, focused on mirroring what the federal law had in terms of the broadband language, which was very prescriptive. We can certainly get into more details about that later on, the will of the committee. I'll close before I turn to my staff by saying that the bill that emerged from the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee basically sort of tried to achieve the similar goals is the bill that I originally introduced, but sort of went in a different direction in a number of ways that Amy will talk to here in a moment or so. So I just wanted to be clear about that, and I'm not here to speak to the Senate Labor and Commerce version in terms of you know, the sponsor's intent or anything like that. Things are happening pretty quickly now. The hearing in Senate Labor and Commerce was on Wednesday. Today is Saturday. The bill I got to see briefly, and I thank the sponsor for coming to my office. I got to look at it minutes before we went before the committee, and so just to give you some sense of how quickly things are going and The differences, that exist between the bill I introduced and the bill that's now before the Senate Finance Committee. And, Mr. Chair, if, with your permission, if I could turn to my staff to kind of walk through more details of the bill, or we'd certainly be available for questions if you desire.
Before we pass the baton, Representative Edgemon, does any of the finance members have any questions of Representative Edgemon? Seeing none, Ms. Amory?
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amory Lee Lake, staff to Representative Edgemon. Section 1 of this bill creates a new uncodified section providing legislative findings, purpose, and intent. The section has detailed information on the state's broadband program. The section also establishes that the grant and loan programs created in Section 2 are meant to extend broadband infrastructure into unserved and underserved areas, and that such programs will provide support to private entities only under the assurance that assets and infrastructure funded by grants and loans will be developed and maintained for public use for at least 15 years. In the codified sections of this bill, Section 2 adds new sections to AS 4433. AS 4433-910 establishes the Office of Broadband in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It will be a central planning body for broadband in the state, and the section details the Office of Broadband's purpose, powers, and duties, including implementation of a statewide plan. The office may also assist applicants for the grant and loan program established by this bill as they seek other funding opportunities, and the office may accept donations and seek out funding opportunities for which it is eligible. AS 4433-915 establishes a broadband grant and loan program. The Office of Broadband will work with the statewide broadband advisory board established by this legislation to review applications and provide support to applicants for planning and construction of broadband infrastructure in unserved and underserved areas. AS 4433-920 creates a statewide broadband advisory board. The board will work with community engagement task forces, which are also established by this legislation, and it will examine challenges and opportunities relating to regional connectivity. The board will be composed of 8 members appointed by the governor for 3-year terms. Members will have experience in telecommunications and various engineering disciplines and broadband technologies. One of the members will serve as a technology-neutral consultant, which will be entitled to a monthly salary at a range 27. All other advisory board members will receive compensation of $307 a day while attending board meetings, and they'll also receive authorized travel and per diem expenses. Section 4433-930 creates community engagement task forces. We're not sure how many task forces. It's not specified in the bill. The director of the Office of Broadband will appoint state residents to serve on these task forces. They'll include members who represent tribes, health care providers, search and rescue organizations, social service providers, the transportation industry, and regional development organizations. The task force will also include state and local public government officials and tribal or state government employee with access to judicial records. The task force members will receive compensation of $307 a day while attending task force meetings and will also receive authorized travel and per diem expenses. Section 4433-930 is definitions. Section 3 sunsets the bill on June 30th of 2030, and Section 4 establishes an immediate effective date.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I have a couple questions. Is there a difference between the bill that left the House and the bill that left Labor and Commerce in terms of parity, because that seems to be an issue that people are focusing on? But I thought that the original bill had addressed that. But could you speak on that, Representative?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. The difference in the version that's before the committee now doesn't include the parity adjustment fund, which the original bill did, and came forth as a recommendation from the task force, the governor's broadband task force. in the IJA Act, the Federal Infrastructure Act, the amount that was set aside for broadband is $65 billion, and it's separated into seven different buckets. And one of the buckets in particular really addresses sort of the affordable aspect of reliable and high-speed broadband. And so I think the Broadband Task Force, and there's members probably going to testify later on, can speak more succinctly to it. But I think they were very cognizant about setting up a fund that would not only be the repository or sort of the pass-through entity for all the federal money coming through, but also sort of on a maybe a secondary level, take into consideration any money that might be available for equalizing the cost of broadband, because we all know that broadband is very expensive, and the further you go from the internet source, certainly in Alaska, it gets more expensive to provide those services. So the parity aspect, the equalization component of it, is something that will come into play, probably not sooner, because the initial efforts of the broadband office will be to do the planning, the mapping, the setting up of the relationships, determining who's unserved or underserved throughout the state. And then later on, at some point, as this all develops, and keep in mind, this program is not just new in Alaska, but it's new in the federal government as well. And be happy to expand on that at some point later on. So answer your question, the new version of the bill doesn't create that parity adjustment fund.
Follow up.
Thank you. So I think that was a good example from what I gather, and I've been to a couple hearings now in Anchorage and elsewhere where the Broadband Task Force and folks in part of DCCED, Economic Development, are talking about the work that has been done in the last months, years on this effort. I believe that the bill that left the House was following very closely the IJA parameters, including parity, as well as the tremendous work that the Broadband Task Force put together in the fall by a variety of stakeholders. So I think that what I want to make sure that's on the record is that the version that left the House was a result of significant work from the task force and followed IJA, which is the most recent set of guidelines for not only Alaska but the whole United States. And I think that's, I don't know, Representative, if you just want to comment that and how important that is.
Through the chair, Senator Von Hemhoff, that's all accurate. And when we introduced the bill, keep in mind that the deadline for personal legislation was February 18th. We had a hearing. We had the task force come before the House Finance Committee on February 1st. So we really had to scramble to put a bill together. But after that hearing in the House Finance Committee, it seemed pretty integral to me that was so much at stake here that the legislature should be involved in putting the statute parameters for the office, for the advisory board, for any fund that we might determine, and set up a process that was guided by law. And so to your point, when we introduced the bill, we opened up the statute books, and there really is no section of law that deals with this subject. It was blank. We had to start from scratch. So we turned to the Broadband Task Force. We just had the hearing in the committee. And we drew the bill exclusively from the recommendations from the task force to the best of our ability, and that's the bill that came over and was amended in Senate Lame Commerce.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Edgeman, the NITA is out reviewing $6 billion worth of requests in an area that only has $1 billion. And the concern that I have, and I wonder how you would address it, is the issue of unserved and underserved. And I think at the national level that is being discussed so that they have some criteria to award the limited funds that are available. So I'm wondering, how do you see the task force addressing this issue and interfacing with the funds and all of the proposals that are could overlap each other, and how is the underserved and unserved areas defined in the state of Alaska? Very simple question.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, thank you for that very simple question. But I think you've touched on a key point, and that is first mapping that has to occur to delineate what areas of Alaska are unserved versus what areas are underserved. And there's technical definitions that are written into the original bill and certainly the version before the committee that that lay that out. And that's, again, written into the federal act. But the first, one of the first steps that the broadband office would take would be to work in concert with the FCC and other federal entities, and certainly the telecom providers that have already done some mapping in some areas of Alaska, and to put together for the first time a comprehensive, very detailed map of Alaska that sort of pinpoints who's getting high-quality internet today, who's getting, you know, maybe adequate internet, and who's not getting any internet, period. And the whole thrust of the broadband program and the federal law is to get to those that, in a sort of a priority ranking, who aren't getting served first, and then to sort of work their way up to really being able to provide those that are maybe getting, you know, a decent broadband. Mr. Chairman, in some areas of your district, in Fairbanks, for example, has pretty spotty internet. Some areas in Anchorage, for example, the Matsu Valley, but as well to sort of, you know, to figure out who is where and put that into a mapping scheme.
Follow up, Senator Hall.
Follow up. It's going to be a daunting task to get internet in the first place, but if that is able to be accomplished, the larger and the looming question that I see is how are individual households going to be able to afford the internet on a long-term basis. Many areas of the state are struggling today with high cost of living, high cost of energy, high cost of food. How are they going to be able to afford the broadband internet if it's finally accomplished?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Senator Hoffman, again, another excellent point. I think that dovetails the point that Senator Von Imhoff brought up earlier in terms of the parity adjustment fund and, you know, being able to provide broadband in whatever manner is necessary. We drew the bill up, again, based on the task force recommendations, which was, you know, technology neutral as possible. And then in the House Finance Committee, we added a second reference to technology neutral because, in the scheme of things, as you point out, you know, there are going to be some areas in your district, my district, our district, that, you know, we're not going to be able to put broadband, you know, fiber optic cable in immediately or maybe ever at some point down the road. So there are other means are available, satellites or microwave transmission or whatever it might be. Those technologies should be deployed as well. But, yeah, cost is going to be an issue, and I'll close by saying with $65 billion and you read through the federal language, you get the sense that Senator Murkowski and others really were writing a lot of this language with Alaska in mind. Funding down the road should not be the primary impediment. It should be issues such as supply chain or permitting or whatever issues that are going to lie out there that really slow down the delivery of good internet at affordable rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So one of the sections I see in the Labor and Commerce version was something that such programs will provide support to private entities. I just thought that was odd that it would be so prescriptive. What about nonprofits? What about public entities? Did the House version have something that specifically stated that grant and loan programs will only be given to private entities, or did you leave it? Was the House version more open-ended?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'm going to say that the House version, and I'm a little bit at a disadvantage here because I'm not as thoroughly, I wasn't involved in the drafting of the Labor and Commerce version, but the House version, again, sort of piggybacked off the task force's recommendations. We tried to make it as least prescriptive as possible and to provide a lot of the authority that, you know, is going to be governed by the federal infrastructure law, and you're going to have federal communications involved. The general accounting office at some point is going to be auditing the flow of the money. But you've got, you know, three different federal agencies that are going to be also working in terms of compliance with the deployment office. I think the short answer is that the House version or the original version was less prescriptive and more open-ended.
I'd like to, Senator, follow up?
Yes, but after you, if you want to make a comment.
I'd like to just say one thing. I mean, whatever happens here, then we get whatever we get across the finish line. I can almost guarantee you that we'll all be back here next year in some form or fashion adding to this bill, because the federal government is still writing guidance. Things are going to evolve. We all don't know what we don't know. And so I just put that on the table. Senator Bonimoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the other part is the Labor and Commerce bill talked about the need to have in statute to require communities to create local task force. And if we don't have it in statute, and I wasn't sure what if the House bill had this particular aspect in statute, but can't communities organically and independently create task force as they wish, to order to apply for grants, to apply for the parity grants, in order to attract the task force and the technical advisory group to come to their community and do an assessment and then make a plan? I mean, do we need to have that in statute, or are people incentivized across Alaska to do this anyway because of this opportunity?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'd go back to the facts, and I think the chair hit the nail on the head. This is going to be an iterative process. There's just no question about that, because there's so much involved. This is such a new section of law. There are going to be things that we possibly couldn't anticipate today that are going to crop up tomorrow. That said, we left the bill open-ended enough so that the broadband office, the advisory task force itself, working with a technical group that would involve all facets of the industry, could come up with some sort of relationship like that, or with local regional areas who are not restricted by any means. But back to Senator Hoffman's point about the mapping, we're going to have engagement with local entities. There's just no two ways about it. And some of those local entities may have to be what's called anchor institutions, like health clinics, schools, hospitals, and what have you. And when it comes to the mapping, and I'm getting a little bit off of my level of expertise here, but the one thing that sort of comes to my mind is it's almost like census data collection, where you've got to have the involvement of a lot of parties in order to get the sort of accurate information you're seeking. So, a particular regional area, I think, would be well served to be involved in a setup something like that. And the original bill, and I don't, the bill before the committee is a little bit more prescriptive, but the original bill doesn't preclude that from happening.
I'd like to say what we don't want to do is handcuff ourselves, because redundancy is the key, whether it's a satellite or whether it's a landline, and we got to keep that in perspective. Okay. Any other questions before we go to invited testimony? And as we're talking about communications and broadband, you can see that our iPads aren't on our tables today, and we're back to old school with a piece of paper because the technology is down for whatever reason. So public testimony, and I mean invited testimony, we have Hallie Bissett, Chair of Alaska Native Village Corporation Associations. She's the Alaska Native on the Governor's Broadband Task Force. And Ms. Hallie Bissett, if you can hear us, can you put your, she's not online? Okay. Is Niels Andreessen in the room? Niels Andreessen, excuse me. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and give us about 3 minutes of testimony, please.
Thank you. For the record, Niels Andreessen, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. Was also a member of the governor's task force on broadband. I want to speak to two aspects of the broadband task force work that I think were incredibly important. First, the advisory board that was recommended by the task force really is there to set the vision and goals for the Office of Broadband. We understand that at an agency level, staff are going to be fulfilling the obligations that they have under statute in response to federal guidelines. An advisory board is in place to consider the economic, social, community, cultural, environmental, all the different other kinds of considerations across the state that need to feed into statewide planning efforts. And that's very different than a grant review committee or a technical committee, which the department can work closely with technical consultants and others to bring in that kind of expertise. But you want a separate body out there that sets vision and goals in a way that's meaningful and drives the work of the Office of Broadband. And I think that we accomplished that within the task force's efforts. And that's reflected in the version of the bill that passed the House. The version in the that passed the House as well was open. It was broad enough to incorporate a lot of what might be coming from the federal government without being prescriptive, without locking us in to anything, really. It sets the stage for opportunity in ways that are really important. The second thing that I think is really important that came out of the work of the task force is the Parity Adjustment Fund. And it's worth noting that this isn't a new idea. Every broadband task force report that's ever been produced by the state of Alaska has included something like a PCE-type subsidy to help with broadband and communications. And I think what's elegant about the version of this bill that passed the House is that it doesn't commit you to resourcing that fund. It doesn't produce a methodology. It doesn't have numbers in it. And if you've seen numbers that say, here's how much it would cost, those don't exist. There's no way to know what those numbers are because that work hasn't been done. And what the original version of the bill did was say, state, we want you to be prepared for the opportunity that might come from the federal government to bring costs lower for broadband for Alaskans and set up a methodology, figure out criteria, think about the different mechanisms that are going to be important at the state level for interfacing between the federal government and Alaskans who are going to need this most. Do I have like 45 seconds?
45 seconds.
I think when it comes to that parity adjustment, it's not long term. We know that these projects aren't going to happen overnight, so it's going to take time to implement. No matter what the technology is, it's going to take months, years, over the next decade before Alaskans see underserved and unserved communities come to served. And during that period, that's exactly what a parity adjustment is for, is to help before those projects are implemented. You could have a sunset date, you can have a timeline around it, but there's nothing that locks you in to providing this discount beyond that which is needed. And there's a lot of space in the bill to do that. So I would commend to you those two aspects for your consideration and speak broadly in support of, we want to be prepared to have everything in place at the state level for planning, for deployment, and for supporting Alaskans in relation to the federal government, in relation to the state's priorities to implement broadband effectively. Thank you.
And Mr. Andreessen, we have a question from Senator Wilikowski, but what I wanted to say is, if you've got a printed testimony, it's more comprehensive than the 3 minutes that we allowed you here today because of our schedule, please provide it to my office. We'll get it to the committee members.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can either get this now or in maybe for the committee in writing, but I'd be curious to hear what your specific concerns are with the Senate CS. Either now or in writing, if you could.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can follow up in writing. I think that I would note for now that the two items that I mentioned are very different or not present in the CS.
And those two items again are?
A very different composition, Chair, of the statewide broadband advisory board, and the missing piece of the parity adjustment fund.
Thank you. All right. Other questions? Next, we're going to go to our third invited testifier for this morning's meeting, Christine O'Connor, ATA telecommunications industry member on the governor's task force of broadband. Christine O'Connor, if you can hear us, put yourself on the record in 3 minutes, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Christine O'Connor. I am the executive director of Alaska Telecom Association. Thank you, Chairman Bishop, for holding this hearing. We do support the House version of this bill. As has been stated this morning, the bill was created in alignment with the task force and also aligns well with the Investment, Infrastructure, and Jobs Act. Recently, in fact, yesterday, the Notice of Funding Opportunity, including the rules for this massive infusion of broadband funding, was released. And that initial skim through those rules shows that this, the House version of the bill, is very aligned with the rules. And as has been stated, this, the House version of the bill is not too prescriptive, but it's very much aligned. So, as I said, we unanimously support the bill. A couple things we very much like. The House version creates a strong office, but an office which will have the assistance and advice of a multi-stakeholder board. And this is important because the infrastructure funding comes with requirements for extensive stakeholder engagement across tribal entities, communities. The list, I was looking at it this morning, spans through 4 pages of rules of how much engagement has to be done. So this multi-stakeholder board, which was described in the House version, will be very important in helping the office carry out those requirements. Also, the House version has strong priorities to the question that was asked earlier. The first priority is to serve all unserved areas, so that's anywhere without 25 megabit service. So the infrastructure law and now the rules and this House version of the bill all require that. So it's a very exciting moment. We have never seen this scale of resources coming to Alaska to attempt that. One other thing that is very important and useful in the House version of this language is that it's open to all interested parties, nonprofits, private parties, tribes, other native organizations, everyone that's interested in helping to deploy and provide broadband service is invited to come and welcome and encouraged to come and apply through the new grant funding. So with that, I will just thank you again for hearing the bill. Alaska Telecom Association represents 15 telecommunication companies and broadband providers, and we do unanimously support this bill because it will allow Alaska to take advantage of what's been called a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and I think that's a very accurate description. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Would your organization or would you oppose the Senate version of this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we do have significant concerns about the Senate version. The new proposed structure of the board is not well suited to the extensive consultation obligations. And then some of the references are just to dated federal planning and policy, and it's not keyed directly to the new federal law, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act.
Ms. O'Connor, Senator Bishop, I thought I heard one of your last closing comments was the House version mirrors the most recent guidance that just came from the Federal Office of Broadband as recently as a day or so ago. Is that accurate?
Chair Bishop, that is accurate. The Notice of Funding Opportunity from NTIA, which is the administrator for the vast majority of the broadband funds, released their rules yesterday. So that's about 98 pages. And so we're still going through that. But in the initial read, it aligns very well with the House version of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski has a follow-up.
Yeah, So I'm trying to understand the difference with the Parity Adjustment Board and why that's important to have that as opposed to the language that's was put in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the House Statewide Broadband Advisory Board is based on the task force's recommendation, and it is a group of stakeholders representing the user groups, education, healthcare, commerce. As opposed to the Senate version is a list of engineers, technical experts, but not those groups that are the what I think of as the Uber users of broadband technology. The House version has the advisory board with these user groups, but it also adopted a technical subgroup to advise the advisory board on these very important technical expertise issues, but that subgroup wouldn't be tasked with, you know, doing the broad engagement, I wouldn't imagine. So that's a very big difference in the two versions.
Follow up?
My question is more on the Parity Adjustment Board. And is that what you're referring to? Because it looks like, as I'm reading it, in documents that were provided to me, it looks like there was a replacement of the Broadband Parity Adjustment Fund with the Broadband Grant and Loan Program. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that you are correct. There in the House version, there is a Broadband Parity Adjustment Fund, just setting up a fund where if there is funding identified to support that offset to consumer costs, it can be accomplished. There is no board directly tasked for the broadband parity adjustment. So that's the House version. In the Senate version, there is no broadband parity adjustment that has been cut.
And I'm trying to understand, if I could, Mr. Chair, what parity adjustment is. Who does that help? I represent low-income Alaskans in East Anchorage, and I want to know which of these versions is going to be better, which of these versions is going to help my constituents get lower-cost internet. That's what I'm interested in.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the House version allows that to happen. The broadband parity adjustment is modeled after a federal program called it's modeled after the Lifeline program and one that's in the IJA Act called the Affordable Connectivity Program, and it simply means if a consumer has income at or lower than 200% of the poverty level, they qualify for a credit on their broadband bill. Under the Affordable Connectivity Program, that's a $75 credit. So that was the concept that broadband parity adjustment is modeled after.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I think one of the differences that I see is on page 4, line 15. It says the Broadband Grant and Loan Program is a competitive grant and loan program to award funding to eligible applicants to promote the expansion of access to broadband. So I think, Senator Wilikowski, your constituents will be competing against other constituents, and whoever has the best grant application will receive the funds, perhaps. Versus if you apply and you qualify under a parity system, and perhaps Ms. O'Connor can comment on that. I think when you have a competitive grant program, it's, you know, whoever can write the best grant.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the way the House version is structured is that it allows both the parity adjustment, which is not a competitive program. It's based on low-income qualifications. It also allows a grant program for deployment activities, reaching those unserved locations which we discussed. And we must have that grant program in order to use the federal funding. So the House version does both. The Senate version did drop that broadband parity adjustment opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor, for your testimony today. Any further questions before we go to public testimony? Seeing none, we're going to open up public testimony. Public testimony is open. Next, we're going to go to Looks like we got Liesl McGuire from Anchorage. Ms. McGuire, if you can hear us, put yourself on the record in a quick 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. This is Liesl McGuire, lifelong Alaskan who served the state for many years alongside many of you there in the room as we sought to connect people more powerfully. I'm going to scrap my testimony at this point, recognizing the conversation that is at hand and go right to the heart of it. I think both Representative Edgman and Senator Costello should be commended. They both have put many dedicated hours into this issue, recognizing that this will be a legacy issue for the state legislature in connecting our people more powerfully than we have before. We are the least connected state in the nation, and it's due to a variety of reasons that many of you understand. We lack competition. We lack a middle mile. We lack new providers. We lack open acceptance of new and emerging technologies. And this broadband office provides us an opportunity to reshape the future. I would say this. Probably the bill you're looking for is a combination of these two bills. I don't know that you have the time. And as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, there will be an evolution that comes as IJA regulations continue to be crafted and adopted through a public comment. But what I would say my main concern is that whatever you adopt, I think the findings section in the Senate bill are particularly lovely. And if you look at the 31 other states who have been adopting broadband policies, you're going to see more robust findings like this. I think that the commitment to Alaskans in both bills is there. I think the board process of the House bill is what is problematic to me. While I want to commend the members of the governor's broadband task force, I want to say that, unfortunately, the experience for those who are in the emerging technology area of broadband, as I am with OneWeb, we're putting in, have put in a LEO constellation that is now above the Arctic in Alaska, 423 satellites, and we're connecting Alaskans powerfully. We're doing it outside the mainstream of the LEC industry. And Mr. Chairman, I think you can understand what that means. Broadband members are not allowed to be a part of ATA. We were not invited to the table in any meaningful way. And as a result, those who we seek to serve, who are predominantly the unserved and underserved Alaskans in tribal partnerships, community partnerships, unique partnerships, were not really at the table. And so my concern would be adopting a version of the bill that would lead to the similar result. And so
Senator,
I'm going to be very candid today and say that I would ask that if you do go forward with the House version, either there be no industry representative or two. And that is quite simply the point that if you were to have, for example, hypothetically, the head of ATA and broadband industry folks can't join it unless they're elect, you can see what happens. I think we need all of us together. I think the Senate version was a creative way of looking at involving community members.
Senator, could you wrap up, please? We've got your 2 minutes over.
Yes. Sorry. I don't think it was dissimilar, but I agree that it might be convoluted in the final days. So my hope, Mr. Chairman, would be that our eye is on creating an advisory board that's more inclusive versus less inclusive.
Next one. Brief at ease. Back on the record, Mark Springer from Bethel. Good morning. 2 minutes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Senators. Mark Springer calling from Bethel. I am a consultant in the tribal broadband space. One of my clients is the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Tribal Broadband Consortium, which consists of 17 federally recognized tribes. We have an application into the NTIA for a kind of a multi-purpose broadband system out here. We are currently test-bedding OneWeb in Bethel and out in Aquiac. Actually, Aquiac has turned up. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank all the senators that voted yesterday for the tribal recognition bill. I think it's really important that this committee recognize that the first money that comes in from NTIA for broadband development in Alaska is going to be directed towards tribes. Some of it will be in partnerships with the large telecommunications companies, and some of them are going to be with emergent organizations. I support HB 0363D, Senator Costello's version that you are considering today. I have concerns about the parity adjustment, because that's really can be looked at as an industry subsidy, and we have not seen in telecommunications or internet service anywhere in Alaska where subsidies in rural Alaska have had any impact on reducing costs. I will echo the comments that Lisa McGuire made as far as the fact that there may be less than equal representation by industry segments in the planning process under the House bill. I think from my rural perspective, I've lived in rural Alaska for 40-some-odd years, that the Senate CS is really preferable. It does create something of a brain trust with the engineers, but it also has the local advisory groups. And let's not forget that the broadband office will be developing a set of regulations to run this process. And I think we should, we should trust them coming out of the job, just as the legislature does whenever they create a board or a commission under the APA. That has a regulatory responsibility.
Thank you for your comments. We're going to go next to Paul Johnson, Anchorage. Mr. Johnson, 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Paul Johnson, the principal of Nakani Telecom. I live in Anchorage. However, I grew up in rural Alaska, and my engagement in providing professional service for broadband consultation started in Yakutat roughly 2012. From a commercial fishing industry member. First of all, I'd like to commend the governor on their task force selection. Ms. Bissett is very experienced and knowledgeable of issues and multiple issues in rural Alaska. However, it's hard to speak for several thousands of Alaskans, and my previous commenter was exactly right. The first tranche of money coming to Alaska for broadband is targeted towards tribes. And so I will have more further testimony in here, but I want to circle around a couple of points, lawmakers, that you need to kind of keep in mind as people who lived and worked and continue to live and work in rural Alaska. And my concerns always have been about public money used to build the assets of private held companies that can be sold with little or no input from the people that they serve. And the last mile, the task force reports, and I understand the demand for fiber, because that is one of the strongest, most reliant, resilient technologies as it was. But a lot of the focus is that any capital project in Alaska requires considerable timing and issues and permitting, no matter what that project is. You all know this, whether it's oil, roads, anything. And the time that we wait and focus on trying to change the rules, regardless of who's in leadership for our delegation at the state level or provincial level, it doesn't change. And I really want folks to figure out, let's focus on immediacy. Let's focus on the 229 potential partners, our tribes, that can be a conduit and a partnership to help build rural Alaska broadband for everyone. And with the last mile focus, talking about a parity adjustment, it's already talking about subsidies without addressing the real issue, which is cost. And that's the middle mile, which is great for fiber, But if I'm afraid, and many of us are afraid, that if fiber is the last mile option to the home, that there's no downward pressure or economic forces to contain costs. There's not going to be multiple fiber operators going to a community. And there's really adjustment that I'm glad there's been a real addressing all the bills about
Wrap up,
community
please.
Engagement.
You're a minute over.
Thank you very much.
Harold Johnson, Anchorage, 2 minutes.
Good morning, Senators. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Harold Johnson. I'm president of Alaska Tribal Broadband, a native company fully dedicated to serving Alaska tribes. And we're working with Alaska tribes right now. We are supporting a 30 tribal member consortium under Alaska Village Initiatives. 29 of our tribes do not have access to fiber and will not have access to fiber for many years. So we're using satellite. We're using the OneWeb right now, and it's working fine. We deployed the first tribal 2.5 gigahertz network in the state. We're putting another one in for Loop, Unalakleet. We're also putting in some other frequencies for quick deployment. We are not putting in satellite networks. We're putting in fixed wireless networks because we don't have fiber, and we can interface those networks with fiber when it arrives. I like fiber. I'm a fiber guy. I put in submarine cable fibers, a statewide backbone. I run a rural telephone company. We support House Bill. We support the latest Senate bill, 363, put out by Senator Costello. It removes many of the concerns that we had that our tribes were being put down. It was insulting to say that we didn't have the expertise. It could not acquire the expertise to be able to put telephone networks in. That is totally, totally untrue, and that's a result of that kind of language comes from lobbying from the telecom industry, which does not want the tribes to own their own networks because they view that as competition. I like what Paul Johnson just said. There's opportunity for telephone companies to work with us, work with our tribes. Right now, I'm sitting at a conference, a strategic session with a newly formed tribal council of a tribal telecom council of Alaska to be able to give our tribes a voice so that we can speak for the tribes and not have the telephone companies or Alaska.
Please wrap up.
Speak for the tribes. Thank you for the time.
Michael Williams, Yukon Kuskokwim Tribal Broadband Consortium from Akiak. 2 minutes, please.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Mike Williams. I'm from Akiak, Alaska, in along the Kuskokwim River. In Akiak, we are providing service right now, low Earth orbit, OneWeb service to Akiak, and we have our 17 tribes are looking out for NTIA grants to make sure that those 17 tribes are connected. Right now, fiber is down the road, and it's in our plans, and also other services that may be beneficial to our constituents there. 98 homes are connected right now in Akiak, and we are providing that service right now. And it is a lot of difference in our community. So I think I echo the comments by Lucille McGuire and Mark Springer and others that are advocating for the providers to be represented equally, and also all the IJA requirements known to date, and we promote competition by allowing all technologies and all broadband providers access to funds. Do not deprioritize the tribes in the award consideration process, and we need to compensate technical experts for their time. And we definitely support the latest version of the House Bill 363, version D from Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you for your testimony.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Brittany Woods, Fairbanks, Native Movement Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Miss Brittany Woods, 2 minutes is what I mean, 2 minutes. We're trying to get to the floor. Thank you.
Hello, this is Brittany, and I support HB 363 version D. It improves community engagement, promotes competition, and supports our tribes owning their network. I want to emphasize tribes because they have paid the highest cost in being disconnected with career opportunities.
Technology, the
or broadband connection.
Hard land, the one web went down, the hard line went down, and everything's down.
Mark them for a grant.
Okay.
Apologies to put her comments in writing.
Please, Ms. Woods, put your comments in writing and send them to the Senate Finance Committee. So brief at ease. We're going to go to Sean Williams, Vice President of Government Affairs in Anchorage. Please, if you can hear us, put yourself on the record, and it's a hard two-minute stop.
Good morning, Co-Chair Stedman and Bishop and other committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sean Williams. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs and Strategy at Pacific Dataport. We're the locally owned middle mile provider located in Anchorage, launching two satellites over Alaska to provide connections for 110,000 rural Alaskans with broadband. Let me be clear, the ATA does not represent ISPs, middle mile providers, or satellite providers. We did not participate in writing the original version of HB 363, even though we tried, until Senator Costello presented her CS. The committee substitute version that Chair Costello brought forward is supported by the stakeholders who previously had concerns about the original HB 363. It takes into consideration what other states have actually done to simply establish an office of broadband and has several key changes that are important to us. One, it removes the nonsensical parity fund, and I'll cover that more in just a minute. It removes the term in-state, which basically requires the tribes to use incumbent telecoms to get funding. It also does not, the new version, does not deprioritize tribes in the award consideration process. It compensates technical experts for their time, as well as promoting competition. And it does perfectly align with the IIJA requirements released yesterday. Late last night, I reviewed everything, and there's no concern or reason to change anything. Senator Costello's version aligns perfectly. It also establishes a broadband office and advisory board with the goal of serving every household in Alaska, which the original does not include. For those considering the original version with the parity fund, the math simply doesn't work unless the fund is started with $1.68 billion in funds. Since we're in the finance committee, I think you guys will appreciate this. There are approximately 35,000 rural Alaska households who are considered unserved by the FCC, paying $500 a month for internet. If the urban household is paying $100 per month, that's $400 per month, the parity subsidies that needs to happen. 35,000 times the 400 times 12 months equals $168 million per year needed in parity fund interest. To get $168 million at a 10% ROI, the fund would need to be started with $168 billion to achieve true parity.
Mr. Williams, can you finish up your testimony and send the rest of your invited testimony to the Finance Committee? It will be distributed to the members. Next, we're going to go to Marge Stone King, AARP. Marge, can you hear us? 2 minutes. Marge, are you there? Seeing not, we're going to take a brief at ease. On the record, we closed public testimony. I'd like to go back and see if Christine O'Connor is still online.
Yes, Chair Bishop, this is Christine.
Yes, we have a question from Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So, Ms. O'Connor, after hearing the public testimony just now, I see the differences in the House bill and the Labor and Commerce bill. One of the differences is the membership of the advisory board. I see in the House version we have local government, an Alaska Native corporation, a tribal government, a school district, the University of Alaska, a healthcare community, a business community, a broadband industry, and broadband consumer. It does state in the House version the broadband board shall establish a broadband technical working group to provide technical recommendations to the advisory board. In the Labor and Commerce, the advisory board itself appears to be the technical working group because the eight members appointed by the governor are one member who is a mechanical engineer, a civil engineer, an aerospace engineer, an expertise in telecommunications, expertise in fiber optics, expertise in satellite technology, expertise in microwave technology. So, Ms. O'Connor, I guess the question is am I reading this right? Does the House version have more of a geographical and, I guess, stakeholder representation versus the Labor and Commerce has more of a technical representation? How do we marry those two and make it that we maybe have a blend of some sort or a balance? Can you comment on that, please?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I think you've described the differences in the two versions board structure very well. In the House version, I think it is already has blended these two concepts in taking the structure of the stakeholders. And these are very high-level policy people, commerce, education, healthcare, the categories you listed. People that you know will bring vision and guidance on policy. But also, and this was a concept that was really developed in the task force, which was a very similar broad stakeholder group, to say we will need that technical expertise that I think is made primary in the Senate version. It is pulled in the House version through this technical working group that can have all of those voices just to take advantage of we know we will need expertise. So I believe the House version already does meld those two concepts very well, and it has it in the proper priority where you need your stakeholder groups providing the vision, and then they need the support of technical experts.
Follow up.
Thank you. So I think that I do see this in the House bill. It says the technical working group who collectively have expertise in the different technologies. Do you think it would make sense to be in that section, pull a little bit of the Labor and Commerce to provide a little bit of the more detailed membership? There seems to be concern about different, industries in Alaska, making sure they have a seat at the table. And so that's question A. Question B, there also seems to be in the Labor and Commerce a very specific, there shall be a compensation of $307 a day while attending advisory board meetings and shall be entitled to travel expenses and per diem. And there was a comment on the testimony saying that this technical expertise should be paid for their expertise, whereas the House bill basically said members of the advisory board are not entitled to compensation per diem or reimbursement. So we kind of have a disparity here between the two. So question A, should we expand the House version of the technical advisory board to include some of the labor and commerce language? And question B, what are your thoughts about payment to these advisory board members?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, great questions. And I think you may be really lighting on a great suggestion. It would be fairly simple to define out some of these various technical, useful technical expertise. Although I would point out that all of the telecom providers in the state are broadband providers at this point. That's the huge use of the networks. And they use all the varying technologies. We need all of the technologies, including satellite. It's integral to our networks today and will be going forward. But if folks would be find that useful to identify a satellite expert, a microwave expert, a fiber expert, I think that is really what was envisioned by calling out a technical expertise group anyway. And then to your second question on compensation, the House bill is written, and it really appears to model what the task force was able to accomplish. There was no compensation. We had a very diverse representation. There was only one telecom seat, but there were extensive hearings. Many of the folks testifying in public testimony today gave presentations repeatedly throughout the course of the task force. So as one of the subgroup chairs on the task force, I do just want to point out that it was open doors to anyone that would come and present, and then every meeting was public. The task force was able to accomplish a very strong report based on volunteer effort of those stakeholders. And so I think that is perfectly valuable way to do it. It saves resources. But if policymakers who are, you know, in charge of the state's budget, I think they can weigh in, or it's really your decision whether there should be compensation. But I will just say the task force itself was very successful based on no payments.
I see lots of engineers on this board, but I don't see the client listed here anywhere.
That's in the advisory board.
And as we went through our session and we had multiple school districts come through, and you hear some of the stories of $400, $500, $600, $700 a month internet bills to educate their kids because we couldn't go to school because of COVID, there's more work to do on this. We're going to set this bill aside today, but I just want to throw that out there for my colleagues to think about. We need something to entertain. We need someone that's not an engineer, who's an end user. Maybe it's a rural person. Maybe it's an urban person to be on the board as well. So, with that being said, any more questions? Because we're going to set this bill aside. Thank you, everybody. And I'm going to close public testimony again, so I know I've done it twice. It's closed again. And we're going to set this bill aside. Grief at ease. On the record, we one more action item on this. The amendment deadline is tomorrow, Sunday, May 15th at noon. We'll set this bill aside. We're going to recess till 11:30.